Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
The British government has announced plans to allow 16 and 17-year-olds to vote across the UK by the next general election. The move has been met with mixed reaction. Will it really, though, improve turnout and prove crucial in marginal seats? Joining me for more on this is Professor John Curtis, Professor of Politics in Strathclyde University, and David McCann, Deputy Editor of the political blog Slugger O'Toole. Gentlemen, thank you both very much for joining us this morning. David, can I start with you, please? What do you think is going to be the impact of this in Northern Ireland?
Well, the cohort of voters we're talking about here is incredibly small. So essentially, the franchise will be extended to about between 50 to 60,000 50 to 60,000 extra voters. Now, divide that across 18 constituencies, that comes up to about 3% of the total electorate across Northern Ireland. So look, it's not going to be determinative in terms of will Michelle O'Neill remain as First Minister? Will the DUP become the largest party again? It's not going to be determinative of those bigger political questions, but I think the impact could be, and we've seen this in other parts of the world where this has been trialled, where we could see maybe that turnout amongst younger people rise from 18 to 34 year olds because they've maybe started those couple of years early.
And what do you think might be the voting preferences of this cohort? Is there an automatic tendency to believe that young people will be progressive, more liberal, or might they just be more likely to vote the way mummy and daddy tell them?
Well, you see, this is the thing. We ultimately don't know. I mean, the last time the UK lowered the voting age from 21 down to 18, the 1970 general election was a shock Conservative win. No one thought Ted Heath would become Prime Minister, and he beat Harold Wilson. In Northern Ireland's case, look, obviously, because we've got our own constitutional issues, that will be the key thing that we will measure it on. Now, surveys show that younger voters are more prone towards supporting Irish unity. So that would maybe suggest that for parties like the SDLP, parties like Sinn Féin, that there would be some fertile ground for them to ply. But in essence, we don't totally know for sure. But I mean, but those attitudes amongst younger voters towards constitutional preferences would indicate that for parties like Sinn Féin, like the SDLP and the Alliance Party, who also have tapped into younger voters, would see this as more fertile ground than, say, the DUP or the Ulster Unionists.
Let's take a look at somewhere where this was done, not a million miles away, and that would be John Curtis in Strathclyde. You can tell us all about this. The Scottish independence referendum in 2014. I was there. I reported on this. It was absolutely, really, it was very, very noteworthy. The number of school kids gathered at bus stops and in street corners talking about politics. But their impact on the outcome was exactly what you might not have suspected that they would do.
Well, yes and no. I mean, the first thing, of course, you need to remember about the 2014 Scottish independence referendum, it wasn't just 16 and 17-year-olds talking about politics. It was everybody. I mean, you know, the turnout was 85%. That is the highest turnout in any ballot in Scotland since the adult franchise was more or less extended to everybody immediately, shortly after the First World War. It is, however, interesting because it is the one case where the argument that David Daniels just put forward, which is that maybe by enabling 16 and 17 year olds to vote, we instill the habit of voting somewhat earlier, and therefore as a result in the longer run we have a beneficial impact on turnout. There has been a project at the University of Edinburgh which has been tracking what has happened to the turnout of 16 or 17-year-olds in subsequent elections, because, of course, although we're now talking about extending the franchise in Scotland, as in the rest of the UK, for UK parliamentary elections, Scottish devolved elections, and indeed Welsh devolved elections, have had the age of voting reduced to 16 for some time. And that research certainly argues that those people who were able to vote in the independence referendum 16 and 17, and most of them did, like everybody else, are now indeed somewhat more likely to turn out and vote in subsequent elections than we might otherwise expect. Now, truth is, The last time this was looked at, it's what, the last Scottish election in 2021. It's only 7 years on for the referendum. And we will really only know the answers to whether or not this makes a difference or not in about 30 years' time. But that is the argument that's put forward, that 16 incentive votes, not necessarily because they're more motivated to turn in politics, but they, the evidence is not just in Scotland, the Isle of Man, Austria, places which have done this, is that 16 and 17-year-olds are somewhat more likely to turn out and vote than certainly 18 to 21-year-olds. But primarily simply because they're more likely to be living in a stable address, they're more likely to be living with their parents, and that these are things that helps to ensure that on the electoral register and that they're under some influence and an ease to go voting. Whereas if they've just gone to university or they've just moved home in order to get a job, they're much less likely to be connected to their address and therefore they end up not voting. So that, it's much to do with circumstance than anything
okay.
else.
So that's the numbers.
Have some impact on the turnout.
That's the numbers and the turnout argument. But the way they voted was also something that went against expectations. With, was it 54-55% of those 16 and 17-year-olds voting to remain?
Well, that's not the figures that I have to hand. The figures I would have is that basically there was a small majority in favour of independence amongst those who were 16 and 17-year-olds. But certainly what was true is that at that ballot, the younger section, so not just the 16 and 17-year-olds, but the 18 to 21-year-olds, were less likely to vote for independence than were the 30 or 40-year-olds. That was the group that was keenest in favour, although the truth is it was those aged over 55 who were primarily against. That said, we should have to remember that politics moves on and that actually now the link between support for independence and age is stronger than it was back in 2014, almost undoubtedly, because the issue in Scotland now is no longer simply about independence vis-a-vis the UK, but also whether you want to be inside the European Union, because the vision would be that an independent Scotland would join the European Union, and younger people are undoubtedly keener on the idea of being inside the European Union. More broadly in Scotland, certainly it's the SNP who would hope to benefit, as would the Greens. Unlike south of the border, the Labour Party's vote is not stronger amongst younger voters, but like everywhere else in the UK, the younger voters are less likely to vote Conservative or Reform. But the crucial point was the point that was made just at the beginning of this conversation. We are talking about adding about 3% of names to the electoral register, not just in Northern Ireland, but across the UK. It's relatively small. And in fact, one polling company is doing a poll across the whole of Great Britain back end of last week, shortly after the announcement, included 16 or 17-year-olds in their sample. Now, age is, as I said, related to voting behaviour, but the difference it made, 0.2% for some of the parties. So it's a relatively small political impact.
0.2%. David, if we give 16 and 17-year-olds in Northern Ireland the vote and we don't do more by way of civics classes and sure. about voter education, what kind of, well, taking John's number there of 0.2%, it's not going to be a particularly massive impact, but it could be quite an irresponsible thing to do.
It could be. And look, you can't just do this in isolation. I mean, John was talking there about Wales. I mean, one of the big differences between Scotland and Wales has been Wales lowered the voting age for their Senate elections in 2021. Remember, at the start of 2021, there was the lockdown. Kids weren't in schools. And I don't think they got the turnout from 16 to 17-year-olds that they really expected. And one of the reasons that people have looked at for that is that kids weren't in schools. They weren't getting kind of the civics education, and they weren't getting kind of the participation that is required. I mean, there's a big debate up here about why will this change not be ready for the 2027 Assembly election in Northern Ireland. And one of the reasons that is being put forward is that, look, there is a civics education piece that needs to be done leading up to 2029. Otherwise, what could be seen as a bright new era of voting could end up being a false dawn if kids aren't properly educated. You know, I mean, with fact checking, for example, is a key thing. Kids are more vulnerable to disinformation on social media now than they have ever been. So that is an incredibly important piece. So we can't just do this in isolation. It has to go with this other piece of political education.
Are some parties more enthusiastic than others about this, David?
Oh, yes. Well, look, Sinn Féin are very enthusiastic about this. The SDLP are enthusiastic, as are the Alliance parties. The DUP is not a supporter of this change, but they're going to have to go along with it because the Secretary of State has the power to extend the franchise here in Northern Ireland. It is not a devolved power. So look, you know, for those more progressive parties in there, it is a big thing. Although it is interesting, if you take a look at other countries around the world, you look at Donald Trump. He's done incredibly well with those type of Gen Z voters. Nigel Farage, I know he's not a fan of this, but I wonder if he will warm to this fairly quickly. Because again, a lot of his politics, particularly with younger men, that is more fertile. We've seen that on the continent with these more populist parties. Mm. It does tend to be more fertile. So I wonder, will we get maybe some sort of surprise when we see these votes counted in 2029?
John, Nigel Farage is not a fan of this. He said that someone who is not old enough to run an election shouldn't be eligible to vote in an election. Do you think that a party like Reform UK stands to lose or gain under this proposal?
The answer is to lose. Basically, as in Northern Ireland, the parties that are in favour, Labour, the Liberal Democrats, Scottish National Party, the Greens, are the parties that do better amongst younger voters. The parties that are opposed, the Conservatives and Reform, are the voters who are heavily reliant on older voters. The support for Reform is somewhat different in character than that, for example, for the Front National in France. It's very, very heavily tied to Brexit. Support for Reform amongst those people who voted Leave in 2016 is running at around 50%. And that immediately tells you something crucial, because it was older voters that voted to Leave, and therefore it is older voters who are voting for Reform. There's a lot of excitement generated by the fact that, yes, younger men are a little bit more likely to vote for Reform than a younger woman, but both groups, it's relatively small, and also a lot of attraction because Nigel Farage has a lot of followers on TikTok. But, you know, sometimes the world of social media doesn't necessarily tell you what's going on in the real world.
David, 60,000 potential votes for the asking here in Northern Ireland. Which of the seats, which of the constituencies do you think that it is most likely to have an impact on?
So there are three seats in Northern Ireland of the 18 that are held within 1,300 votes. So two of them are held by the DUP. So there's East Derry, which is held by the strong sum of 179 votes. Gregory Campbell just held on there against Sinn Féin. You've got East Antrim, which is held by Sammy Wilson by just 1,300 votes. He'd be trying to fend off the Alliance Party there. And then, of course, in North Antrim, where Jim Allister beat Ian Paisley by 450 votes. Now, this kind of goes back to what John was saying there, you know, and why some of the progressive parties would probably be more in favour of it. You know, even if it is only a few hundred voters in each constituency here, 16, 17, to come out and vote, you know, in places like East Derry and in places like East Antrim, that could very well be the margin of victory for either the Alliance Party or Sinn Féin. So those three seats will be the ones that we'll be looking out for in 2029, where this change could have an impact.
John, are there plans for voter education in schools in the other countries or nations within the United Kingdom?
Well, the truth is, of course, because Scotland, every election apart from the Westminster election since the independence referendum, has had 16 and 17 year olds voting. The schools are now very well aware of the need to give their students access to political information, including not least the candidates. One of the things that happens as a result of this is that schools invite local candidates to turn up and take part in the hustings. They sometimes did that beforehand, but now the candidates have every reason to go and to say yes to these things, because they know that their audience, if they're going to a secondary school, is going to consist of a lot of people who indeed will have the chance to vote, and they have the chance to vote for the first time. There was a lot of concern at the time of the independence referendum about whether or not teachers would be, you know, allegedly indoctrinating their students, et cetera, et cetera. I think a lot of those concerns have now been alleviated. But that, yes, schools certainly...
How, John, were those concerns alleviated?
Well, because in the end, nobody was really able to come up with much in the way of evidence that they, in some way or another, teachers were trying to persuade them what they do. There is a, particularly in Scotland, there's a very strong tradition in our educational system of a subject called modern studies, which you don't find in the rest of the UK. And that is all about the politics and sociology and economics of our society. So that ensures, therefore, that there is a body of teachers who are well used to teaching students about potentially controversial but crucial subjects in a manner which is duly impartial.
David, what do you think, or how do you fancy the chances of something like that being rolled out in Northern Ireland without controversy?
Yeah, I mean, it would be interesting. Obviously, we've got a very heavily segregated education system in Northern Ireland, but I have to say, though, it wouldn't have been common when I was a kid in school, for example, that having a DUP politician in would be quite rare. But that has been alleviated. I mean, politicians from both sides of the community go into schools in other parts of the constituency. So I would be with John on that. I think that is a fear, and that has been an argument used in Northern Ireland against this change. However, I think in this day and age, it is something that has been greatly alleviated. 20 years ago, yeah, I concede it would have been an issue, but not in Northern Ireland as of 2025.
Very interesting. David McCann, deputy editor of the political blog Slugger O'Toole, and Professor John Curtis, Professor of Politics in Strathclyde University.